This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We had Nick Caserio on yesterday. This time yesterday, we were talking to the Texans executive vice president and general manager. You can find the entire conversation on our YouTube page. You can find it on the Odyssey app, the Payne and Pendergast podcast as well. Plenty of places to find it. Good conversation. The typical 40 to 45 minute chat with Nick. We enjoyed that. Offensive line, a big topic for this team this offseason. Maybe the biggest topic has been the offensive line, because we know in Houston how we felt about the offensive line all year last year, and they've gone to great efforts to change a lot of the faces on there, including the people coaching the offensive line. One of the guys sticking around, Titus Howard. And we know he can play guard. We know he can play tackle. Do we know, Nick, if Titus is going to be playing tackle or guard as we head towards training camp?
I would say specific to Titus, that's an example of a player that he's actually shown that he can play at a good level at either spot. So there is sort of an innate level of versatility. I think sometimes that term is used a little, I would say not carelessly or freely, but that the assumption is a player just has position versatility because of A, certain measurables, or B, should be able to do it. But if you've actually never seen him do it, it's hard to make that extrapolation and to make that assessment. And you're really not going to know with that player until you actually get into training camp, because it's a little bit of a dynamic.
And I guess the thing I would wonder, Seth, like, so does this mean that we could see in training camp, and this would be a stark contrast to last year where they just trotted the first team out there and that was who was going to start against Indianapolis, it seemed, and it ended up being in week one. Like, do we see reps at practice where Titus is at right tackle with a group and then they go, okay, next group in, and then Titus is at left guard with another group? Or do you think, like, they keep him in one place, like, and let it roll?
I wouldn't be surprised if he's done that. I'm just trying to go back through my memory bank. I'm guessing we've seen that before anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
he's done it enough now at this point that I don't think you don't worry about messing up his technique or permanently damaging him if he has to be versatile within one individual practice. But I don't know. He is now a veteran player, and I think he still has upside in a lot of ways in his game, and hopefully his scheme can kind of bring that out of him. But he's the least of my concerns. He's not your ideal left guard. He's not your ideal right tackle. But in comparison to the other issues or question marks on the team right now, that he's the one you feel, all right, you at least know what you have in him. He's still going to have to compete to be. I do genuinely think that every one of these guys has to prove that they deserve their starting spot this year. So it's not a foregone conclusion that any of these guys will be starters. It's just he's the one that you feel most comfortable if slotting him in at either of those spots if they have to.
Well, the one thing D'Amico has said repeatedly, and Nick may have said it too at some point this offseason, but I can remember D'Amico saying it, is the five best guys are going to play. And I think it's safe to say that unless Titus comes in out of shape or he just drops off a cliff, he's one of their five best guys right now with this group, right? I think that's a pretty safe assumption.
And again, that's not saying that he's all pro or anything.
It's just
the state of the offensive line right now. It's really, really hard. I don't even like giving an answer when people say, what do you expect the starting offensive line to look like? I can honestly tell you, I don't have a single clue. I think most likely Cam Robinson is your starting left tackle. I think most likely right now, Titus Howard is your starting right tackle at the beginning of the year. But I genuinely don't have a clue, and I have zero confidence in it. I will be that way until September.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. You just answered my question. Damn it. I was going to say, like, should we? You know how they do bracketology during the college basketball season? They're like, if the brackets were to come out today, here's what they would look like.
Yeah.
See, I have the stomach for this. It sounds like you might not, but like, man, we should just...
It's not that... No.
Well, here's what... I was going to say, like, if we came in the next day after each training camp practice and said, if we had to put a starting five out there today based on what we've seen with our own eyes out of practice, here's who it would be.
Okay.
And do it every day. I don't think that would be... I don't know.
It's... I mean, there's so much about this offense right now that's frustrating just because you genuinely won't have a clue until September.
Yeah.
Who the starting offensive line is, who if Nick Caley's a good offensive coordinator, and then that goes on, you don't know in September whether he's good or bad.
Sure.
Take any given year and see the promising starts and the disappointing finishes and vice versa.
Slowick was up for head coaching jobs after his first year. You may not even know after a year if he's a good offensive coordinator.
So we just don't know about so much of this stuff.
Sure.
And I think the thing I do know, or at least I feel, is that I think it will be a genuine competition all along the offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
My hopes would be that Ursary or Blake Fisher, just one of those two guys, really impresses. And that maybe Ursary is starting at right tackle and Titus, because of that. If Titus Howard is playing left guard, it's not going to be because they're not comfortable with him at right tackle. It's going to be because they haven't been impressed by one of the two young offensive. And I'll add Ladarius Henderson and Trent Brown and everybody else into that mix. If anybody impresses at offensive tackle, I think there will be a different guy than Titus Howard at right tackle. That's hard to do in training camp. There's just not that many reps anymore.
Well, unless Titus Howard, if he's playing right tackle, unless he's taking some leap where he looks like a Pro Bowler in training camp, and I think that's really hard to... Well, I mean, he's going to be going against good guys if it's ones-on-ones. If the starting tackles, assuming health for everybody, if the starting tackles are Cam Robinson and Titus Howard, I promise you one of the biggest topics that listeners will want to be pulling us into here, and I think it's a good topic, is, okay, you just used a second-round pick on Blake Fisher last year. You used a second-round pick on Ariante Ursary this year, and neither of these guys are starting right now at either of the tackle spots. You know, again, unless Cam Robinson and Titus Howard are just that much better than everybody else.
All right, maybe I'm being too cynical, and you know how I hate rookies to begin with. Is it more likely that one of those two guys is going to impress and or at least make the coaches comfortable enough that he can play right tackle? So whether it's Blake Fisher or Ursary or the Darius Henderson or Titus Howard, Trent Brown.
Yeah.
One of those guys will be the right tackle, and then Titus. Okay, I've revised my opinion.
Yeah.
Titus Howard is more likely to be the starting left guard. And I think Lakin Tomlins is a guy who's entering his mid-30s.
Yeah.
And probably they feel good about having as a potential swing interior.
They like him in the room. You know, they like having... I think they want more and more guys just in that room that embody what they want from an offensive line group. If I were a betting man right now, I would say Cam Robinson at left tackle, Titus Howard at left guard, and Blake Fisher at right tackle. Those would be my guesses at those positions.
Pure guesses, obviously. That makes sense. I'll take that one.
Pure guesses.
Did you say it right tackle?
Blake Fisher.
Yeah.
Blake Fisher. Here's Nick Caserio on this rebuild and versatility on the offensive line.
I would say in our situation, we feel like we have a number of players that will be able to compete in the offensive line, and we have certain levels of players or certain grouping of players. You have sort of tackle-only group. You have tackles that can play guard. And I would say in Titus's case, he's proven that he can do that. On the inside part of the line, you have players that are center only. You have players that are guard only. You have players that can play all three inside spots. So what we're trying to do is build up as much depth and versatility, like legit versatility, not just on a piece of paper. You're going to pencil something in. This guy can do multiple things, all to arrive sort of at the same end point. Who are the five best guys that we feel most comfortable with? We're going to have eight players at the game more than likely. So you're going to have your five starters and then your three backups. You're going to have a next tackle. You're going to have a next inside player. And then you're going to have an extra player. And then what do you do if you lose a tackle? Who goes to that spot? Do you put the third tackle in the game? Do you move somebody from a different position? So there's different, but similar to draft, there's going to be a little bit of an ebb and flow here, and we'll get more information here as we work through the process.
Okay, so there you go. So Nick said it himself on the show yesterday, five best guys. So
he Nick's telling you the same thing I'm saying. It's like, I don't know. Right. They gotta compete it out and figure it out. The guys who are, I guess, the guys who are versatile enough to play both tackle and guard, we know that they like Tytus Howard and his ability to do that. I would tell you the tackles that I don't think are going to be playing guard this year are Cam Robinson, Blake Fisher, Ursary. Yeah, Ariante Ursary.
Trent Brown.
Yeah, and Trent Brown.
If he makes
I don't think
team,
those guys
yeah.
are probably going to be playing guard. Whereas, Ladarius Henderson might have the ability to play guard. Nick
right.
Broeker, I think, can play both guard and tackle.
Yeah.
But the name brand tackles, I don't really see a whole lot of. I'm not eager to see many of those guys at guard.
Yeah, the biggest bucket of players they have is tackle only. That's four guys in that tackle only bucket right there. So
yeah, Blake Fisher. Maybe I'm being Blake Fisher. Could, you know, he has the athleticism to do it. He needs to just be able to play with a better pad level, and hopefully with just more getting more of his man strength, he might be able to do that. Blake Fisher, I would put as a wild card that they might give him some go at guard.
That's interesting.
If they have to,
yep,
yeah,
that's interesting. Here was Nick Caserio on rookie Ariante Ursary.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that, Seth. I think the first two, three weeks, you should have.
Seth's question was about Ursary possibly bumping inside to guard. So this very topic we're talking about.
No, my question was about Ursary's athleticism.
Oh, okay.
Just kind of assessing his athleticism.
Okay, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that, Seth. I think the first two, 3 weeks, you should have an understanding of, A, how it's going and whatever position that player is playing. I think one of the things you always have to be conscious of, you never want to put the player in a position that's not favorable to him. If you're asking a player to do something that he's never done before, where's that sort of line of demarcation of when you, A, introduce it, and then, B, how much work can you actually get done? You have to take the player. It's always case by case. Some can handle a little bit more than others, but you just want to make sure you're not putting the player in a position that's not favorable to them, where they really can't accentuate their strengths and do what they do well. So I would say in Tay's case, and D'Amico mentioned this the other day, Tay's a tackle, really, until he's not. So I think the focus initially will be on tackle, and then we'll see kind of how we mix and match the rest of the group. Could that change? Possibly. I think the one thing you always have to be prepared for is just about anything. So sometimes you're forced to maybe make some decisions because you injuries or whatever else happens around you. But you want to be smart, and you want to make sure you're making a good decision on behalf of the player.
I was wrong. Sean set that up the right way.
The cut, cut says we'll try at guard, yeah.
I know. I mixed up what I was looking at and yeah. what I was thinking about. Sorry, Sean.
That's okay.
The worst thing about it is before you play a Caserio clip and you realize you messed up at the beginning of it,
you
got to
wait a minute eight
to correct
yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was...
The biggest thing about all of that is it makes me feel good that they're not trying to force square pegs into round holes, at least, and that, all right... Versatility for versatility's sake, like saying somebody's versatile and then hoping that it's true, that feels like how Bill O'Brien used to operate at times. There is like they wanted a guy to be versatile, so he's going to go down and play guard whether he can actually do it or not. I think at the very least, the way Caserio frames it is you gotta really just wait and see what a guy can actually
do. Yeah, man, let him eat what's on his plate and do what he's comfortable doing to start. They did that with Xavier Suofilo, and I think that was probably a big reason why he was just so ratchet out of the chute.
Right from the get-go.
Yeah, they're playing him everywhere.
Four different positions
his
rookie year.
Yeah, yeah. They're not going to do that with Ursary, it sounds like. And D'Amico even said that the other day at the golf tournament. Like, no, he's going to – we like what we saw him film as a tackle. He's going to be a tackle to start out with. So there you go. We play all that to say that we will not know diddly squat about the offensive line and who the first five. That'll be the most interesting one, like – who are the first five that they trot out there as the ones? Because this will be a year where you can read almost nothing into it. You know, like, whereas last year, it was like, oh, there's the ones, and they stayed the ones all the way up until, other than Laremy Tunsil practicing on some other field, you know, with elastic bands and things like
and
that.
And honestly, I think the story during training camp, for much of training camp, was, man, the offense really isn't clicking. And we don't know who to blame in terms of either CJ or the receivers, because the problem is CJ can't get the throw off in time in a non-contact practice.
He took so many of those.
Because the defensive line is just destroying the offensive line so thoroughly.
I hate those. The fake sacks. And, I mean, I like them because CJ's not getting hit. But there were so many of those sacks where CJ just eats the ball in the pocket and just stands there. It's like, wait, like what the hell, man?
Like, or there were so many like throws that would make the social media highlights and people are going crazy about it. But meanwhile, if you're at practice, you're like, yeah, he would have gotten sacked three times before CJ made that throw.
Yeah.
He was just kind of throwing it up because in disgust, and somebody came down with it. It's 7 seconds after the snap.
Or he takes off and runs for about 30 yards. Like, he would never do that in a game. And they're not allowed to touch
him. Yeah, it's
all
this stuff that just wasn't – they couldn't run their offense.
They couldn't.
The defense was too good.
And
like, what do you do if you're D'Amico at that point? Tell the defense to back – hey, full speed for the offense, three-quarter speed for the defense.
Yep.
Okay, guys?
Yep.
Today we're going to play 11-on-9. No defensive tackles because Mario Edwards has had 4 sacks in the first
Mario
period.
Edwards turned into Reggie White. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sean, is it not pronounced stevia? I've been saying it wrong my whole life, or has Sean been saying it wrong his whole life? I say stevia only because the soda is pronounced Zevia, not Zevia. But I believe it
Are
is pronounced.
Are you sure that it's pronounced Zevia?
Everybody who recommended it to me pronounced it Zevia. So the answer would be no. I'm not sure. I haven't really checked into it. This is the first person
to stevia. Also,
he's right. Like the actual sweetener itself is stevia.
Yeah.
So maybe it is Zevia. I don't know. You're the first person to call me out on it, Texter. I'm not sure.
I do not like the taste of stevia. It's sweet,
I like it.
But there's a nastiness to it. It might as well be saccharin for me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just okay. You're trying to dupe me.
Yeah.
You're telling me this is sugar, and it's obviously and clearly not sugar.
Someone said that you made them feel like a real jerk for eating a Pop-Tart right now. Seth got asked about what yogurt he eats. Earlier and gave some good I thought some good nutritional advice there.
Sean, I don't give nutritional advice. I just tell people what works for me.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing more annoying in the world than when something works for somebody, them saying, "This is how you need to do it."
No,
but everybody's different.
That's true for the little things, but the big piece of advice you gave was you'd cut out refined sugar. And you're sleeping better at night. I don't know of any nutritionists or people out there to like, you should really load up on the refined sugar, you know?
Right, but I'm also, you know what? Like, some people, depending on what their metabolism is and like how much exercise they get, like, refined sugar is no big deal.
Yeah.
So I just say, I mean, that's pretty good blanket advice, though.
That's what I mean.
You're never going to hurt yourself by cutting out refined
that's
sugar.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, the effect may be different on others, but I don't think that was necessarily bad advice.
I've spent 35 years since I started paying attention to nutrition. I get so tired of people saying, no, this is the way you lose weight.
Well, you're not going to click on your Instagram posts if you don't say it emphatically, Seth.
Yeah. This is the only possible way any human being should eat.
No, the best ones are the ones you've been told for years that .. Those are the best ones. Because oftentimes I'm like, I have been told that for years.
Oh, that's the one that
gets me. What do you have to say about it, shredded guy that's eating an entire pepperoni pizza? I want to see how you got there. Yeah.
There's this one guy that gets all kinds of traction, and he starts off, because it's come across my timeline a bunch of times. He does this like once every 6 months.
Yeah.
And he starts off saying, vitamin D is such and such and so important, except no doctors talk about it. And I'm like, I haven't gotten my blood done in the last 25 years where my PCP hasn't specifically addressed my vitamin D and talked about the importance of it. But it worked. I don't know. They were like, the doctors won't tell you this.
Yeah, dude.
I'm like, everywhere I turn, there's some doctor telling me about my vitamin D levels.
You're among the tippy top of the percentage that are actually going to check them on that. You know what I mean?
Am I just lucky enough to have had good primary? And I've had like 8 different primary care guys over the last 20 years.
You're a professional athlete. You've got access to better health care, at least during your playing career, than the average person does.
I could go down to the 24-hour health, the drive-through emergency room there, and they're going to ask me about my vitamin D.
Yeah.
I don't go to, ever since I was done with football, I'm talking about since I've been done with football.
Yeah.
My random run-of-the-mill primary care person.
All right. Did the Rockets cause the injury that is changing the face of the playoffs? And this is a good candidate, excuse me, for Take-A-Mania. I just burped on the air. This is a huge candidate for taking. I know it's this. It's the bubbly I'm drinking right now.
It's your stevia.
No, it's not. I'm on bubbly today. I'm not on the Zevia today. Sorry about that, listeners. My bad. The candidate for the worst take of the week is coming up next. All right, Steph Curry. Steph Curry's hamstring is pulled. He's going to be out for at least a week. That came down yesterday. The report. Shams Charania had the report. Here was Brian Windhorst on his podcast, The Hoop Collective, talking about Steph and some of the information he got about Steph after Game 7 against the Rockets. Is it possible that the Rockets, perhaps one game too late, caused the injury that is changing the face of the Western Conference postseason?
I am not any sort of medical professional or expert. I'm not pretending. I'm not saying that this has anything to do with it. I'm just going to state a fact. On Sunday, when the Warriors went into Houston and won Game 7, Steph Curry ran 1.99 miles in that game. The most that was, since we've been tracking, I don't know, a decade, it's the most he's ever run in a game. Now, this guy is obviously incredibly conditioned. It was an amazing performance. He had 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 blocks, 2 steals. That was the farthest on record we've ever seen him run. So at age 36 or whatever he is, he has the most running he's ever done, and 48 hours later comes up with a hamstring injury.
I like this theory because the Rockets are the ones that caused him to have to run so much, because they're actually a team that pays attention to things going on off the ball and paying attention to Steph Curry. By and large, except for some rare exceptions, they're not a team that loses sight of Steph Curry.
Right.
There were moments that they did throughout the series, but for the most part, and I would say more than most other NBA teams, they pay attention to Steph. So Steph's got to run more to get free.
It is. Going back to Chris Paul pulling his hamstring in Game 5, the Rockets have been riding Chris Paul hard, and the Warriors were making Chris Paul work really, really hard in that series. And remember after that, it was after Game 5 when Kerr was kind of smiling, even though they were down in the series and what have you. And you're wondering, it might have been after Game 4. But like they felt, yeah, it was after Game 4, because I think the Warriors felt like Chris Paul can't keep this up. Like at some point, we're just going to break Chris Paul, and he broke. So Steph Curry, I don't know if it doesn't make me feel any better that, okay, the Rockets gave him a real run for his money, but they did make the Warriors work, and the Warriors gave the Rockets a lot of credit for playing the kind of defense they did.
In a weird way, forget about any animus or pettiness that we've got towards Steph Curry. It just purely as a spectator, not that we're going to be talking about this series of Minnesota and Golden State every day on the show, but just as a basketball fan, to me it makes that series a little more intriguing, because now you can see, okay, does Jimmy Butler have to go into the same hero mode now without Steph that he did in Miami a couple times to get them to the NBA Finals? And by the way, doing it against a team that I think he played one season for and wanted the hell out of there. Like, people forget the Jimmy Butler Minnesota season is among the more forgotten seasons in Jimmy Butler's career. He's played for like 5 teams. You know, he was at the Sixers for a period, in Chicago for a period, obviously in Miami, and now he's with Golden State. I don't think there's any love lost with Jimmy Butler and the fans in Minnesota. So in a weird way, removing Steph Curry, one of the 5 or 10 greatest players of this generation of all time, from that series makes it more intriguing to me. I don't know if it makes it more intriguing to the average person listening to us right now, but I do think there are some Rocket emotions tied up in this Steph Curry hamstring. Like, why Game 1 of the next round? Why not Game 6 of the round against the Rockets?
Why not the second quarter? Well, I don't know. Maybe the second quarter would have been too late. But just the second quarter of Game 7?
Yeah, it might have been too late the way they played. Yeah.
Curry didn't do anything in the first quarter. I can't remember when he scored his first point, but he was 0 for forever Rockets were already down heavy. So, yeah, Game 6. Let's say Game 6.
That would have been good. That would have been good. All right, so, Seth, I think I've told you about this. The show before ours, Maggie and Perloff, both of whom we've met, and I like them both personally. Andrew Perloff has some weird takes sometimes. I'm just going to put it out there. He's got some strange takes. This was one where I said, this is Tankamania worthy. This might show up again tomorrow.
This is Tankamania worthy, especially because it starts off as a bad take, but then as evidence, the data he uses to justify his bad take goes over the top.
Yeah. So here was Perloff kind of minimizing. This is yesterday morning. So this is the morning after Steph Curry pulls the hamstring. Him just saying, it's no big deal.
You guys don't think that Curry has any chance to come back from this? I mean, we've all had little hamstring pulls. They're
tough. Amount that he runs and how he has to move throughout a game, I don't
What are you talking about? He goes from the top of the three-point line on one side to the top of the three-point line on the other.
Constantly moving.
That cannot be further from
moving on offense is easy. They'll hide him on defense. All he has to do is hit a bunch of threes.
Ask Reggie Miller and Klay Thompson, guys who do that stuff, the kind of conditioning they do. It's grueling. It's like that is very hard. It's terribly hard on the defenders to cover those guys because they're in better shape than them.
As a former big man in high school, I'll tell you right now, the guards don't do crap. They're running 40 yards.
Give me a break.
And Steph, running on offense doesn't count. Anybody can run around and get a shot.
He was like the most well-conditioned guy in the NBA because of all the stuff he did off the ball. This could not be more wrong.
Well, regardless, I think like he can be effective in a different way because he can hit his shot. Like, he's a hamstring injury will, like, if it's Ja Morant and he has an injury, as we saw, that's bad. But Steph can be effective a little bit, right? Like, you still have to watch out for Steph. I don't care if he has one functional leg.
What are you talking about?
I don't know what he's talking about there. What? He kept piling on. Sean, okay, I took notes during this just to count up the bad takes within one overall awful take.
Yeah.
Started off with, we've all had hamstring injuries. Two, so you guys all know what I'm talking about here. Two, moving on offense is easy.
That's different than defense, yeah.
Three, as a former big man in high school.
I want to think that part he was only kidding, but the take surrounding it was so bad.
I think he was. It's just, no, but it's almost like I don't know. Has he ever watched the Warriors actually play basketball?
Has he ever watched Steph play basketball?
To act like Steph Curry, that all he does is catch and shoot or something.
He shoots. A big chunk of his shots are shot with guys chest to chest with him almost. Like he has to create space to make to shoot a lot of his shots.
And off of, like, to say he can do the same things off of one leg. Like, what can that, if he only has one leg and that's the one leg that he's taking the shot off of.
Dude.
Yeah, he can be a fat. No. His whole game. The reason people get so angry with the Warriors is because they run so many damn screens and so many of them are sketchy, but they run screen after screen after screen, and he never stops moving.
Okay,
What the hell are you talking about, Perloff?
I'm looking at all your notes right now. You've just gone through those, and those are fantastic. Those are all things. The one thing I wrote down was not on your list is where he said all he has to do is hit a bunch of threes. Like it's Papa Shot or something like that. Like all he has to do is hit a bunch of like he's standing at a machine, but the machine is a Papa Shot that's 25 feet in length. Like he's making it sound like he's in the 3-point shooting contest on All-Star Weekend. Like all he's got to do is stand there. Like no, he runs 2 miles a game. You know,
it was like he confused maybe, and it would still be wrong if he was talking about Klay Thompson. But maybe it would make a little bit more sense if he was talking about Klay Thompson.
Yeah,
back in the day.
Yeah,
but it would still be really, really wrong. But I'm astounded. I'm honestly astounded that he would say
that. A national host doing his morning show having that opinion.
It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
He's just like, nobody runs as much as Steph Curry.
Yeah.
That's backed up by hard GPS data. And yet somehow it's no big deal and anybody can do it.
I like Perloff, but I'm listening to this and I'm going, this is one of the worst takes I've ever heard in my life.
You know what it is? There's not a guy out there he could have been talking about. I mean, like James Harden when he's at his worst of just dribbling, and then passing with 2 seconds left in the shot clock.
Yeah,
there have been times where, but even then with James Harden though, like no, you still because he's ridiculously fast getting to the hoop and I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't even want to justify the take, but the only thing I can think of, or like offensively, you just stick Steph in the corner. And then obviously somebody has to pay attention to him, if there's a drive and kick out or whatever.
Kind of like the old James Harden half court strategy. Remember when they would just park James Harden at the half court because it would pull it would pull somebody. Somebody has to go out there.
Yeah.
That's what he should have said.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he was working towards, except he didn't want to invoke James Harden's name in the playoffs.
He made it sound like there's degrees of hamstring injuries where, Steph will be fine. It's a hamstring. The very first line, we've all had hamstring injuries.
It was the fact that he made it sound like such an insignificant thing.
Yeah.
That it was no big deal.
Yeah.
That he had a hamstring injury. Like, a huge part of Steph Curry's game isn't running around all over the place.
That's one of those moments where I'm listening, and I know this isn't the case with Perloff. I mean, he was part of Dan Patrick's staff for years and years and years. Like, but it's one of those moments where I'm like, do you watch sports? Like,
I wonder if
I know he does. I know he does. But like, that take is that's a take like somebody would have by the water cooler who tweaked a hammy at the gym or something. Like, it's not that bad. Come on.
We should doctor that up for him and say, this is what you should have said, where you could have salvaged yourself. Is like, listen, guys, all right, I'm exaggerating, but let's go. This was not popular at the time, but there were times where James Harden was such a potent force that there were times the Rockets felt the best thing for him was just go ahead and hang out near the half court. Somebody's got to come out to guard you, and then you can play 4x4 and have some space down on the rest of the court.
Well,
like, that's the only way he could have salvaged himself.
The notion that you can hide a one-legged person on defense too is a little. I mean, are you going to be forced to just play zone the whole time?
Did he mention that?
He did. He said you can hide him on defense. Now, if there's a team that you're going to just hide somebody on defense, just by playing zone the whole time, it's Minnesota right now. They can't shoot at all. they are 14 for their last 76 from three.
But you still got to contest those threes, and according to Perloff,
hide him.
Steph doesn't have to run to do it.
Hide him.
Like, how do you fly out to guard a three when you're playing zone? You just hobble out
just
there.
Just hobble out there.
That's
So, Seth, just know that you're going to be judging that cut again tomorrow.
That's a tough one, man. That'll make the quarterfinals in the annual tournament at the end.
The defending champ right now in Take a Mania, it's our bad take segment we do every Friday, is Mel Kiper and his rant about we know how to scout quarterbacks. The NFL doesn't.
Right. He said the NFL doesn't. We do.
We
the
do.
The fact that he ended on we do.
We do.
When there's so many receipts of him making horrible opinions about quarterbacks. Backs in the draft.
Yeah, sorry, I infected you with my burp. And
I know, now we're always it's going around.
Yeah, some couple people saying they're laughing out loud. I actually accidentally burped mid sentence in the previous segment. You can go back and listen on the Odyssey Rewind feature. All right, Adam Schefter just put out a list. He just tweeted this out a few minutes ago. Are we sure that this is the right approach for the Cowboys and George Pickens to be taking with their new relationship? We will have that for you coming up next. All right, the big news yesterday in the NFL was the trade of George Pickens to the Dallas Cowboys. George Pickens to the Cowboys for a third-round pick. The two teams swapped some day three picks as well. And the big news that's come out since then has been that both sides have agreed that there will be no contract extension in conjunction with this trade. George Pickens has had his moments in Pittsburgh where it's been really good. Statistically, though, he's still a cut below the receivers that he probably views himself as, you know, I should be paid like these guys. So it's a prove-it year for him. The Cowboys, I should say, are totally cool with that. They're always cool with putting off paying somebody. So they were like, sure, that sounds amazing. We don't have to pay you now. We can pay you later. We're still doing that with Micah Parsons. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess the word of warning, Seth, to George Pickens would be, what has happened with Steeler wide receivers since leaving Pittsburgh? I've said this for a long, long time. Whoever scouts receivers for the Steelers in terms of where they get picked and the talent level has been, I don't know if it's been one person or a group or if it's even been the same person through these years. But they have found some very talented and, for them, productive wide receivers outside of the first round. Antonio Brown, sixth-round pick. Mike Wallace, third-round pick. Juju Smith-Schuster and George Pickens are both second-round picks. Deontay Johnson, third round. Martavis Bryant, fourth round. Chase Claypool, second round. Like, that's a whole bunch of guys that have had really good seasons for the Steelers.
For the Steelers, yeah.
The Steelers picked outside of the first round. And then there was Santonio Holmes, who actually was a first-round pick. But how about these numbers? Every single one of those guys I just named were less productive, and in many cases, far less productive than they were as Pittsburgh Steelers. Antonio Brown, who was a Hall of Famer as a Steeler, averaged 86 yards a game with the Steelers, dropped 19 yards off of that to 67 yards per game with the two teams he played for after that. Mike Wallace went from 64 yards with the Steelers down to 49 yards. Santonio Holmes, same thing. He dropped by 20 yards. Juju Smith-Schuster dropped by, looks like, 27 yards per game. Deontay Johnson, I mean, not only dropped by 25 yards a game, he's been on like five different teams, including the Texans, in that time frame. Oftentimes for very short periods of time.
Yeah.
Martavis Bryant, now he had issues off the field with suspensions and whatnot, but even he was averaging 50 yards a game, 53 yards a game with the Steelers, went to the Raiders, 33 yards per game. And then the biggest drop-off, Chase Claypool, who looked like he was a rising star with the Steelers his first year or two in the league, drafted in 2020. He's averaged 11 yards a game on the two teams that he's been on
I think the Steelers, I mean, it's credit, I guess, to their ability to pick wide receivers and get the most out of guys who aren't first-round picks, but also just how they use them. And that despite whether it's Ben Roethlisberger in his prime or declining Ben Roethlisberger or Kenny Pickett or whomever else it might be, Russell Wilson, that they do tend to, it feels like they play above their draft positioning pretty consistently. I think the one thing we can tell from the Steelers and their history with many of these guys kind of agitating their way out of town is that the Steelers are a better judge of wide receiver talent than the wide receivers are judges of themselves.
Yes.
That I feel like the Steelers get the most out of them. These guys tend to feel like they're being held back and held down because I got to get somewhere else where I can really show my true talents.
Mm-hmm.
And then and sometimes they just fall to dust, and spectacularly so.
Yeah, yeah. So George Pickens, you've been warned, man.
I feel like Pickens might be the one, though, Sean.
Do you?
Well, this is the thing.
Yeah.
It's not like Pickens has to be a steady producer.
Yeah.
It's that he does have very real deep threat ability. His
no
average
doubt.
Yards per catch every year is over 15 yards per
yes.
catch. So I think when you put him opposite of CeeDee Lamb, that there's potential that he ends up having. If he gets over 1,000 yards for the second time in his career, it's going to be in huge chunk plays.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a steady diet. He might be a real headache for you from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, Dak Prescott's got to be excited about it for sure. CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens as his two wide receivers. Okay, we just got done talking about Steph Curry's hamstring and what the Rockets might have done to help cause that. Played a really bad take from Andrew Perloff about the hamstring. I had to check and see if this excerpt was real after I retweeted it yesterday. There was somebody posted on Twitter what looked to be an excerpt from an article, and I retweeted it, and it was about Steph crying in the locker. I'm going to read it here in a second, but it's about Steph crying in the locker room. And after I retweeted, said, "Boo freaking who," quoting Dennis Leary's character from Draft Day. But then several more excerpts popped up on the internet in the same font. Some didn't look all that serious. I'm like, all right, did I just tweet out a fake excerpt from an article? But no, this is real. This is a real passage from an article in The Athletic about Steph Curry, all right? It's by Marcus Thompson. Tell me, Rocket fans, if you feel sorry for either Steph Curry or Steve Kerr after this. Steve Kerr, in all his profundity, is that even a word? Profundity, couldn't say anything as he watched the superstar he's coached for 11 seasons succumb to the suffocating disappointment. Kerr already knew. As tears fell from Steph Curry's eyes, the heartbreak still fresh from the news that he sprained his left hamstring. Words weren't what Curry needed or what Kerr had. So the Golden State Warriors head coach, in this halftime moment Tuesday in the visiting locker room of Target Center, didn't even try finding the right words. He just hugged his point guard.
Oh. That's tender.
That is the first two paragraphs of that story. Scale of 1 to 10. How sorry, Seth, do you feel for Steph Curry and Steve
Kerr.
Just
devastated. I mean, it all ends here, apparently. I mean, to be bawling like that at halftime of a game after you've won multiple championships and but now you're injured in game one.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you, Sean, how much he really puts it all out on the line.
Yeah, man.
All hail Steph Curry. Good for him.
By the way, is sprained left hamstring the proper terminology, or is it strained left hamstring?
No, strained. Yeah. Strained. Yeah, sprained is a ligament injury.
Yeah.
And a sprained left hamstring would be a big deal, whereas a strained left hamstring, not that big a deal.
Yeah, man.
Did he say sprain?
He said sprained in the article, yeah.
He managed to use profundity, but also screw up sprain or strain. I'll give him a break on that. I can't criticize people for mixing words
up. He's got profundity.
Whole brand.
He's got succumb. He's got suffocating. He's got a lot of stuff going on here, man.
Yeah, that's why I hate when people say, it's just a sprain. Like, all right, no, technically a sprain is like a torn ACL.
Yeah.
You can never say just a sprain.
Yeah.
You got to say, oh, it's just a mild sprain or something.
Right. And I know that was the Sarah McLachlan music from the Animal commercial. Like, I'm not going to sit here and go, for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help Steph Curry's hamstring heal. I'm not going to do any of that. We're not raising money here. Yeah.
The fact that he's coming back in this series potentially too is it's weird. I'm not going to begrudge somebody for crying in a devastating moment. I just feel like I'm surprised that felt that devastating to Steph Curry at that point.
Yeah.
That, okay, it's game one. Maybe it's evidence that he doesn't trust his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'm going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, it's game one. This is what Steph Curry was running through Steph Curry's mind.
Yeah.
It's game one, and I'm the only freaking guy they got. I know people want to talk about playoffs, Jimmy.
Yeah.
But he's got a, I'll call it a sprained pelvis. Yeah. And Draymond, there's only so many other. Maybe he knows something about Draymond's current suspension situation or something.
Yeah, maybe.
The league sent out a memo that that's it. We're gonna bring the gavel down.
Last
next time
straw.
This happens.
This is it for you, Draymond. One more incident with you, I tell you. In the visiting locker room at the Target Center, didn't even try finding the right words. He just hugged his point guard. That had to be secondhand, I'm assuming. Marcus Thompson wasn't following Steve Kerr into the locker room at halftime with his little notepad writing down everything he saw.
Yeah, that's okay. That's a really good point.
Secondhand, right?
Yeah, who's saying that? I wonder if Steph Curry is. Honestly, I'm a little bit. Again, I got no issue with guys crying after bad things happen to them.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that this would be the moment that Steph Curry was going to break down in tears. So I wonder when Marcus Thompson wrote that, where he got the actual cry, the tears streaming down his face nugget from.
Well,
if it was at halftime, it's not like he observed it himself.
Yeah, right. And the whole thing with Kerr, like, didn't even try finding the right words. You probably weren't there. And did Steve Kerr tell you he was having trouble finding words? Maybe he had the exact right words, but he's like, yeah, you know what this needs? A hug. I've got the exact right words to say to this guy, but Steph looks like he doesn't need my words right now. He needs
feels
a hug.
Feels like fiction to me, Sean.
It does. That's what made me so curious about this. But you Googled the first sentence of it, and it's real.
It's a real, it's a real story, but it feels like there should be a disclaimer. This is based on real events. This is based on true events.
Based on a true story?
Yeah, so it's not like, listen, all right, it's generally
like
what
Rudy
happened. But,
I love that. All right,
there's a series that's on Netflix right now called The Terror. And it's about this expedition that the English, when they were trying to search for a Northwest Passage, expedition gone wrong. But it's got all kinds of supernatural elements to it and everything. So it's based on real events, but it's fascinating to watch because you're going through and you're watching, like, okay, I mean, there's ghosts and spirits and stuff in this, and nobody knows for sure what happened. But you also know that it is, so you end up, basically it ends up being a reading assignment.
Yeah.
You watch the series and then you got to go back afterwards and be like, okay, so what do they actually know?
Yep.
It's a nice little, it's a fake history lesson, which spurs a real history lesson.
There you go. What's it called? The Terror?
The terror.
Okay.
It's really good.
Okay, it's thumbs up by you? Okay, good.
Yes,
good.
It is terrifying.
Okay. Hey, let's circle back to some Nick Caserio from yesterday, the most popular draft pick for the Texans. He had a lot to say about what they like about him. One of the cuts from Nick where he specified some off-season performers here got a lot of run yesterday. We'll have some excerpts. We'll have some cuts from the Texans GM and our long conversation with him yesterday. That is coming up next.